Do you hear women saying that their bodies are working against them?
Yes, often.
In midlife?
Even prior to that conversation, I remember a time I was feeling like that. So going back about 2 years ago, I literally, Debbie, would get out of bed struggling. And I thought, my mattress is great. I'm doing the strength work. So what is it I'm not doing enough of? And that's when I started to look at. I am an osteopath and I've been working as an osteopath for over 22 years. Getting into osteopathy was actually quite difficult for me. I came out of university and I was full of the energy and enthusiasm, but no one would give me a job because apparently I didn't look like an osteopath. So
what do osteopaths look like?
I'd like to know.
I'm not sitting up very straight. What are the most common posture-related issues that women in midlife face? What can we do about it?
So, I mean, one of the most common ones is, I say to women, bash your bones.
Bash your bones,
bash
what
your
does it
bones.
Mean? Pick up weights.
So it's jumping and running up the stairs because every time we add the impact, what happens is our bones want to lay down more calcium.
How do you see women in midlife coping?
I'm seeing women talking about it. I'm also still having women that are still a bit like, do you think I could be perimenopausal? I think having that talk, having a safe space where we can discuss things and actually realise we're all in it together, really. So I think the more we're talking about it, the more open women are being with it.
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife, so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause.
Today, we're thrilled to welcome our next guest. She's a renowned osteopath and posture expert. With a Hello Magazine column and regular appearances on ITV's This Morning, her extensive knowledge has helped countless individuals improve their physical well-being and navigate the challenges of midlife. From the impact of posture on confidence to managing perimenopause-related aches and pains, Nadia brings invaluable insights to help us feel stronger, healthier, and more in tune with our bodies. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Nadia Alibi. Nadia, thank you. Thanks for joining us in my living room.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a bit about your background and the path that led you here and why we're here today talking about the brilliant work you do and women in midlife.
Thank you. So I'm an osteopath and I've been working as an osteopath for over 22 years. Getting into osteopathy was actually quite difficult for me. So I didn't have this straightforward story like some may. I came out of university and I was full of the energy and enthusiasm, but no one would give me a job because apparently I didn't look like an osteopath. So
what do osteopaths look like?
I'd like to know. However, I'd go into these interviews and I'd be told, you're very petite, or you look like you should have gone into fashion. And I remember one gentleman actually lifting my hand up and he said, your hands look very dainty. Are you sure you've got into the right profession? And I was mortified and I thought, what am I going to tell my parents? That I did this 4-year degree and here I am and no one wants to give me a job. And it was at that point I thought, I'm going to start my own practice. And I did.
And that's how you started?
That's how I started. And
so you're an entrepreneur?
I'd like to say I am an entrepreneur.
You can say it, own it.
At the age of 23, I just started. And I thought, right, I'm going to go and start my own practice. And the rest is history. And today I prep boxers and MMA fighters before they go into the ring. And if I ever listened to that person who told me back then my hands looked too dainty and too weak and I was in the wrong profession, I wouldn't have got to where I got to. So I'm glad I listened to my heart.
So boxers and MMA fighters,
yes.
How? Why?
I think as the years went on, my reputation of being able to get people right, healed, injury-free, stronger, word got around, and from there they just came my way. They wanted the prep before they went into the ring, and it's always so much fun because, you know, it's I find it quite funny because when I go into reception to collect them, they kind of look at me like, oh god, she's very small, like what's she gonna do? And 10 minutes in I get the question of, what are you using? And I'm like, my thumb. And literally they will raise their heads to check if it is my thumb, and that's when a lot of them will say, you know, I'd much rather go into the ring than be here because, right, you are very strong. So, yeah, you know, it is. I do find that quite funny each time I have treated a fighter.
So part of the purpose of the podcast of Grit and Grace is to talk to women in midlife. And I am, and you are, yes. And I'm not sitting up very straight. What are the most common posture-related issues that women in midlife face, and what can we do about it?
So, I mean, one of the most common ones is the stiffness and aches and pains of the joints. A lot of women are waking up saying, I feel quite stiff, I feel quite achy. With going into menopause, we start to release and decrease our estrogen levels, and as that happens, we lose muscle mass, and we also lose bone density. So what starts to happen, a lot of women may have previously had an upright posture and start to notice they are rounding quite a bit. So those are things that I look at, but also share lots of tips on, so we can talk about that shortly.
Okay, give me some tips.
So let's start with with posture.
Yes.
Let's start with this one, actually. So a lot of people, if we looked at our late queen, she wouldn't sit like this that often. She'd be crossed a bit more at the ankles.
Yes, is that better?
It is much better, okay. Because you're a lot more aligned and you're sitting on both your sitting bones, as opposed to when you're on one, you lean over to one side. So sitting crossed at the ankles, it adds more for lift. Another one.
Do you think she'd had advice from an osteopath?
I'm pretty sure definitely. She did. I'm pretty sure she did. And I feel that once you're sat in this position, it can help you sit in this way for longer periods, as opposed to when you're sitting. And there's nothing actually wrong with sitting in this position as long as you keep swapping position. So it's trying not to stay static.
But changing the leg
changing.
Cross.
So you
why
can
do I find it hard to sit up straight? Like, particularly if I'm sitting on the ground.
Okay.
I cannot sit cross-legged for any period of time comfortably. What's wrong with me?
Do you know, a lot of people do find that. I think generally we are in a culture where we sit a lot more, be it watching the telly, be it scrolling on the phones. And what's happened is we have adapted to shorter hip flexors. So when we then go and sit on the floor, we feel quite rounded already. So it's about trying to getting onto those sit bones. I say to a lot of people, don't do this in the offices while everyone's watching. But if you're at home, get a comfortable chair, something that's quite firm, and you want to pull aside one butt cheek and then the other, and you'll actually feel your sit bones. And when you feel that, you'll naturally rise.
So how should we sit as women in midlife during the day? So I think about our audience, they're doing lots of different things.
Yes.
So they're doing this, they're walking around, they're in an office, they're not in an office, they're on the move, they're in a cafe. Give me the top three tips that they need.
Firstly, movement and being dynamic with your movement is amazing. So the women that are moving around, going from one posture to another, great. My main one here is if you're sat there, especially women that are working from home and maybe sat there for hours on end, that is what we need to change. So we need to keep moving, keep changing posture, getting up, maybe popping the kettle on or getting some water, and then coming back. When you're sitting, try to sit on the sit bones. So, you know, the technique I just talked about, even a bit of a shuffle to feel the sit bones, and then rise from there. Crossing your ankles as opposed to at the knee, that will also help. And again, swap sides. So it's all about movement. Movement.
How does posture influence confidence in midlife? Do you hear that and see that? Do you think about it yourself? Do you do power poses?
Absolutely. And posture, if we look at posture, so if we look at firstly someone who's quite rounded, we you know, automatically think lack of confidence, or maybe they're a bit shy, someone who's got their head down a lot, you can't make eye contact. So they're not as easy to approach as opposed to someone who's a bit more lifted and the head is lifted. There's also elegance about good posture as well as confidence. And then once you can make the eye contact, you're able to actually, you're going to want to speak to the person as opposed to someone who's quite rounded and looking down at all times.
What do you tell your MMA fighters about their posture?
Well, I find with a lot of the male fighters, or even just men in general, you know, there is a bit of swag with sitting with your leg crossed over and just looking a bit cool. And doing it for short periods, again, nothing wrong. But if you are sat in that posture for long periods, that's when you want to be sitting upright. And again, even with fighters and with everyone in general, lifting, bringing those shoulders back, having the head a bit more raised, all of that adds to the confidence.
So specifically for women in menopause, yes. Perimenopause and menopause, we hear a lot in our community about hip pain,
yes.
Back pain, sciatica. If you look at the 48 acknowledged menopause symptoms, quite a lot of them are really related to how our body feels.
Yes.
So in clinic, what do you see specifically happening to women in perimenopause and menopause, and how do you treat it?
Right, so in particular, I find women in perimenopause and menopause, they do have the stiffness as well as the aches and pains. So what we do is firstly try to address what lifestyle changes they can make. So be it more movement into their routine, strength training to me is a big one, because as we go into perimenopause and menopause, our estrogen levels start to decline, and then we start to lose muscle mass, and then we start to lose bone mass. So for me, one of the first things is strengthening our bones. And I say to women, bash your bones.
Bash your bones.
Bash
what
your
does
bones.
It mean? Pick up weights.
So it's jumping and running up the stairs. Because every time we add the impact, what happens is our bones want to lay down more calcium, because our brain starts to think, okay, hold on, well, she's jumped 10 times today, she might jump 20 times tomorrow, we need to be prepared. So that's one. Now, people and women that are suffering from arthritis in their knees or their hips, they may find that a bit hard. One of my favourites, which I've started doing actually, Debbie, is using a rebounder. Have you ever used one?
What, jumping on it?
Yes.
My pelvic floor can't, how can yours take that?
Start slow. So I have a rebounder,
yeah.
And if my mum comes, I have one of those handles. You know, she'll just do a gentle bounce. Now, even with the bouncing, what that's doing is there's weight bearing there with the bouncing, but it's a low impact. So if you're someone who has aches and pains or suffers from joint pains or arthritis, and the thought of running up the stairs or jumping or skipping is just a nightmare, get onto a rebounder, because
okay.
What that does is that movement, it will start to get the calcium into the bone, as well as that it won't have as much impact into the joint.
Do you hear women saying that their bodies are working against them?
Yes, often.
In midlife?
Often.
Tell me about that, and what do you do when you're having that kind of conversation in clinic?
Even prior to that conversation, I remember a time I was feeling like that. So going back about 2 years ago, I would wake up. I literally, Debbie, would get out of bed struggling. And I thought, my mattress is great. I'm doing the strength work. So what is it I'm not doing enough of? And that's when I started to look at an overall. I made a checklist of checking in with my body through the day. What's my posture like? Have I done a strength train? What have I done today to just get something in for myself? What's my movement today? Have I moved today? Because I'm back to back in clinic when I'm with patients, and when I get home, I'm with my children. So what have I done for myself? So I look at what I'm putting into my mouth, from my nutrients, my supplements, my food. I also look at how I'm moving my body. So that to me is really important, but also making sure when you're sleeping and if you're waking up, if you're someone who wakes up in the morning with aches and pains, making sure you're well supported. So for example, if you're getting ache in your lower back, having a cushion between your knees and sleeping on your side, that takes so much pressure off.
So how should we sleep? So I do that. That's a pregnancy hangover,
yes,
for me.
Yes.
So I need a pillow, because
yeah,
we get used to sleeping like that when we're pregnant.
That's right.
But when we get into bed, what's the ideal position to sleep in? One pillow or two pillows, what sort of mattress? Tell us the mistakes that we make.
Okay, so let's start.
And should we sleep with men?
Should we sleep with men?
That's the kind of big question. You know, are you better off in a bed
alone?
On your own?
Yeah. Okay, so I personally, I think having a good night's sleep is so important. So if you're sleeping next to someone who is, for example, snoring or making lots of noise, that is going to break your sleep. So I think that's indirectly answering your question there.
Got it.
With regards to aches and pains, however, so if we're looking at the neck, it depends on the position you're sleeping in. So if you are a back sleeper, for example, you in that case may need just one pillow, because you don't want your head too high up or too low down. If you're on your side, you want to bridge the gap between your ear and shoulder. So your pillow should stop you going too low down and stop you going too high up. So it's like Goldilocks, getting one that's just right. And it's so personal for each person. If you're a tummy sleeper, for example, I say to tummy sleepers, have a pillow under your tummy and be a bit flat, not too raised at your neck. So it's all about support. But if you're someone who suffers from back pain, one of my favorite go-tos is side sleeping. I like to have a cushion between my knees, but also I get a hand towel, I roll it up and I put it under my waist.
Oh, so, tell us about that.
Yeah, so that, because what happens is a lot of times the spine sinks into the mattress. So when you get that and put it just under, it adds a lift and oh, the support, and it's just the support that you have around your spine, you'll sleep like a baby.
There's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
What can menopausal women do about sleep? And now obviously that's one of the things that we're focused on at Better Menopause because of our Better Night product, which for me has changed the way that I sleep, which prior to that was really, really bad. But as an osteopath, talk about sleep, it's about position, but what else can we do and think about during the course of our day to ensure that we have a better night's sleep?
So for me, firstly, trying to get rid of the blue light, making sure you stop your scrolling at least a couple of hours before going into bed, because the blue light activates your brain to keep thinking you're awake. So at that point, it stops producing the melatonin, which you need for sleep. Another one is actually when you're rising, one of my favorite things to do. So being a school-run mum, there were times I'd wake up and I'd look absolutely shattered. So the thing to do is just to whack on my sunglasses, I would do the school run and come home. And what I noticed actually is in general, if I looked a bit dead, I would put on my sunglasses and go and do a supermarket shop. And I then realized when I did my research, actually, I'm really stopping my melatonin production. So I actually ditched my sunglasses and I started, instead wearing a baseball cap because I wanted to get the sunlight through my eyes. Because as you do that, you start to increase and start producing melatonin, which will get you ready for sleep. So not wearing your sunglasses in the morning, stopping to scroll towards the end of the day. To me, also things like setting up a whole ambiance in your room, to me, is really important. So going into a room that feels cozy, I like to light some candles, I like to have a book read, or sometimes I'll journal. I'm really big onto breath work. So for me, breath work is a big one. Where
talk to us about what you mean when you say breath work.
Fine. So with breath work in particular, I'm very much about stimulating the vagal nerve, which helps you relax. So I'll do a bit of humming. Not the best at it.
Humming
away, or even gargling is another great one.
Gargling's
amazing to stimulate your vagal nerve. So doing that before bedtime will just start to get you into a place of zen.
Gargling with what? Water.
Mouthwash. Some people do salt water. If you're a mouthwash person, mouthwash. But that gargling will stimulate your vagal nerve, and from that you'll just start to get into that place of zen. And then after that, I tend to go into bed and I do something called diaphragmatic breathing. Have you ever tried it?
Yes, but go and explain. Yes.
Okay, so with diaphragmatic breathing, I tend to put one hand on my tummy and one hand over my chest. And what I do at this point is I picture a balloon inside my tummy and I breathe in through my nose. And as I breathe in, I'm waiting for the hand at the bottom to raise. And I try to make sure there's not so much movement here. And as I breathe out, the muscles around my stomach will start to go down. So as I breathe in, the tummy comes out. And I breathe out, the tummy comes down. And what that also does is it starts to make me go into that relaxation mode. I know a lot of people also talk about yoga nidra, where they take two inhalations, sharp inhalations, and one exhalation to help them get into a gentle and a deeper sleep. But I tend to play with it. So I don't have this whole course of things I do. But in general, I like to, shall I tell you my biggest thing?
Just tell me.
My biggest thing is my bath time.
Right.
It's everything. So at the end of my day, when I get home, I'm normally exhausted. So, I'll have seen my patients, I'll have got my kids into bed, and then I'm like, it's time for myself. And I will get my bath going. I get some Epsom salts in there, some lavender oil added on. I'll get some candles lit. And I'll sometimes listen to music, something very gentle, and I just have a soak. And that to me, it's like a hug. I love it. And it just gets my whole body relaxed, gets my nervous system to be calm. And then when I get out, I then make my way into, I'm already half asleep.
That's so, it. I'm done. Stretching.
Yes.
So I have got the strength training down. I train all the time. I throw weights around, but I'm not brilliant at stretching. In fact, often, because I'm so up against it time-wise.
Okay.
I'll skip the stretch. That's bad, right? So to talk to us about what we can do, and to the point that you made about women in midlife increasingly feeling stiff and achy, what role does stretching play?
So stretching is really important to increase muscle elasticity, to also allow the joints to have more space. So a person who's doing strength training on a regular basis without actually having the stretch, they'll have the strength and the tone, but the joints may not move as far as they should. I love doing a yoga class once a week, and I go for something quite gentle. And sometimes for me, it's a bit like, God, this is a bit too slow, because I like to go and lift my weight. So having something slow sometimes for me is just like, I feel like I'm wasting my time. But whenever it comes towards the end of that class, that's when I feel, oh, I'm so connected with myself right now.
If we can stretch one thing every day, what should we stretch?
Hip flexors.
Okay.
Your hip flexors. One that I love to do is even just lying on your bed, dropping one leg off the bed, so letting that hang, and then pulling the opposite one into your chest. And the reason I say hip flexors is we hold a lot of emotions in that area, but also because we spend so much time sitting, so long sitting, we are using those muscles and shortening those muscles on a regular basis. So a lot of women will say, oh, I have a sway back posture. Why does it look like when I'm wearing my dress, I'm sticking my bottom out? Many a times is because they have tight hip flexors. So releasing that off helps also the hips as well as the lower back.
So you're known for giving very holistic advice. If you had to give me the top three things that women should do to manage their menopause, what would they be?
Right, so for me, strength training would be a definite, because we're trying to increase our bone mass, but also our muscle mass. Stretching, again, another, you know, given. But for me, it's breath work, breathing, because I feel now, you know, being a menopausal woman, and a woman in general, we're doing so much more than we ever did. And I feel sometimes just taking that time to pause and connect and breathe is so important, because it gives us that stop in the day. And I think we're always just trying to do so much. It is that pause that, you know, helps with the anxiety a lot of women are feeling, helps with irritability. There's times in the month where I'm just like, dragon, I am the dragon, I'm literally lose it. But pulling it back in and working on my breath, it gives me that pause, so then I go, all right, okay, it's not that bad. I can now tackle it.
I know that you gave up refined sugar. Still giving up refined sugar?
Well, okay, so now I will have the occasional dessert. But Debbie, what happened is Christmas came and I was just going crazy. Like, you know, I think I was doing a mince pie every night, and the dessert boards, and the, you know, going to events, it's just there. And I just formed the habit. And when it came to New Year's Eve, I remember I had that last piece of dessert and I said, right, tomorrow's the 1st of January, I'm not having any more tomorrow, and I'm gonna do this for a whole month. Because, you know, research shows refined sugars are inflammatory. Also the refined sugars, they cause the spikes in the blood sugar level. So now being perimenopausal, already having my moods going up and down, and then having that added on with my blood sugar spikes, I mean, I thought I was going to do Lally at one point. So I pulled that away, and the first week I was just like,
The shakes.
Oh my God, I kept going to the cupboard trying to get a biscuit out, and I was like, oh, a cup of tea without a biscuit doesn't feel the same. But then week two, I was about to start my period, and I was on edge, and I thought, I'll have a biscuit, no one's gonna know. And then I thought, no, don't do it. Don't do it, Nadia, you've got this. And I just kept drinking. I drank more water, added a bit of Celtic sea salt in it and some lime. I kept myself hydrated.
Say that one again.
Celtic sea salt.
Is that nice?
I love it. So it rehydrates. So a lot of people, they talk about hydration and they just drink water. But if you don't have the solutes, you're not rehydrating in the best way. So I will add sea salt and I'll add some lime, and that just hydrates me and it refreshes me. And by week two, my cravings just went. I had no cravings. And I just thought, bingo. And
what made you break?
Do you know what? Honestly, I didn't. So week three, I was like, my bloating's gone. My waist feels a lot more, you know, cinched in. And then came February, and I thought, I thought I would be that person when the 1st of February I would run to the cupboard and have all the desserts I could, and I didn't. And it was actually on Valentine's Day. I went for dinner with a friend and they had a beautiful dessert, and she just said, you can't say no, and I had some. But I went halfway through it and then I just couldn't because it was just too sweet. So I thought, something has changed with doing this detox for me. So now I feel like I'm a lot more in control as to when I'm going to have it. I'm hydrating a lot better, but my cravings have gone and my moods are so much more balanced.
What's the one piece of advice that you wish you'd been given at the start of your perimenopause journey?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I think it was to be kinder to myself. I don't think I realised, you know, how it was going to be. I kind of, in my head, thought, okay, you know, it'll happen, my periods are just going to stop, and then I'll have a few mood swings and it'll then work its way out. But actually, I had lots of changes actually happen at that time, and I wish I was a bit slower, a bit more gentler. I wish I took a bit more time for myself. I tend to be the giver, so I like to help everyone. And I think at that point, I wish I was told to just stop, pause, and give more to myself. And now, kind of being 5 years in, I feel I'm doing a better job with it.
And in terms of your client base, how do you see women in midlife coping? I think what we hope is that it's a moment when they can start looking after themselves more. Is that what you see? Do you see more of a recognition that they need to put their own oxygen mask on first?
I'm actually seeing that a lot more now. I'm seeing women talking about it. I'm also still having women that are still a bit like, do you think I could be perimenopausal? Or, oh, my libido has really dropped, or my energy levels are really low, and I'm getting more stiffness in my joints, and what's going on? And I think having that talk, having a safe space where we can discuss things and actually realise we're all in it together, really. So I think the more we're talking about it, the more open women are being with it.
What can women do to reverse damage or bad habits, or to make sure that they are living their best life in midlife and feeling like themselves again?
So I feel personally, from a joint level, firstly is as the estrogen levels drop, our bone density drops, and we are more likely to go towards osteoporosis and fracture bones. Now, osteoporosis, to me, it's a silent thief. It creeps in, and most times women don't know until they've knocked their elbow or had a fall and something breaks, and that's when the x-ray shows, oh, okay, you fractured it, and oh, actually, you do have grade blah blah osteoporosis. So what's great with osteoporosis is that it's reversible, and you know, we can do things like the movement, the strength training, weight resistance work, the rebounding, as I'd mentioned, having a diet that's high in vitamin D. Right now, you know, we can build vitamin D through the sunlight, so exposing our skin to the sunlight. But I think in general, what I'd love to say to women is taking the time to connect with yourself and move your body, because those two things, when you can connect with yourself and then move your body, everything feels a lot easier within the joints and within yourself as well.
Can you show me some stretches? I'm not proposing that you get down on the floor in your dress, but even from a chair.
Okay, so from a chair, with a lot of people that are, let's say, working from home, I say keep your feet, you know, grounded, and just basic even twisting motions. So holding onto the chair and twisting, holding each pose for about 10 seconds. Another one I really love to do is just having my arms up and just wiggling up towards the ceiling. Some people like to, you know, just pull their knees in, but whatever, even if it's ankle movement, you know, rotations of the ankles, rotations of the wrists, and even just flexing and extending. So trying to get movement going, especially if you're sedentary, to keep it going in the seat. If you can get off that seat and move around, do it.
And do you do your workouts in the gym? You know, Colleen Rooney famously does 50 squats in the shower.
Yes.
She was in the jungle.
Yes.
Do you do that? Are you exercise snacking, or is it that you have a sort of focus 45 minutes and that's when you get it done?
So I have a routine where I will do twice a week of strength training in the gym. I like to rebound at home. So I'll pop the kettle on, I jump on the rebounder for anything between five
in
and...
In gym kit, not dressed like this, I've seen, like, but yeah.
Yes.
But
in gym kit. But also, if I could be at home in my pyjamas, and I will get on the rebounder for a bit, 5 to 10 minutes, just to get everything stimulating. Movement to me is really important. So between patients, I will be in my door frame stretching. I will jump on the floor and get stretches going. So I keep movement going through the day. Because to me, a body that's constantly moving, a dynamic body, is a healthy body.
And if someone feels overwhelmed and they just don't know where to start to make positive choices for themselves, where should they start? What's the first thing to do? What's the first step?
Start slow, even if it means getting off that chair and walking to that kettle to pop that kettle on. That's your first movement of the day. If you want to take it further, I love to say to people, get out into nature. Listen out for the sounds of the birds, because that stimulates and just relaxes your nervous system and resets your nervous system automatically. So it's just slow steps. I know a lot of people get overwhelmed with, rebounding and no strength training and stretching and yoga. Start slow, gentle movement. So I always say slow and steady wins the race.
Thank you. Now, before we let you go, we would love to know your top tips for living your best life in midlife. So okay. I'm going to ask you 8 quick questions that you haven't prepared for. Right, if you could pick one skincare brand that you'd recommend for midlife women, what would it be?
So I've just started one called Almora Botanica. I love it. It's an Ayurvedic brand with a lot of science backed behind it. It almost feels like they have this day oil and a night oil, and they have this serum for dark spots and pigmentation. And Debbie, I promise you, I literally put it onto my face and it just felt like my skin just drank water. It was lovely. So Almora Botanica for me.
Favorite fitness gym brand?
I love aloe yoga. I love aloe yoga. I just find that, you know, it sits well with the skin. I feel it holds me in well, but I feel my skin can breathe at the same time.
Top wellness tip, if you could pick one thing that completely de-stresses you, what would it be?
My baths, bath time all the way, taking that time out to stop. Don't have your phone, don't scroll at the same time. Just have that moment to yourself where you can unwind.
Your favourite influencer or expert or doctor for menopause advice and support, who's your go-to?
I love Davina McCall. I just feel that she was a game changer in the industry, and I just feel that she made it safe for women to talk about menopause.
Favourite supplement for tackling menopausal symptoms?
Better Menopause all the way, and it's Better Night for me. I just feel their ingredients are incredible. They've got the ashwagandha, they've got vitamin D, which I love, magnesium, and they've got Afron, which is a saffron. It's a saffron extract. And again, all of these are great at stimulating melatonin and promoting a deeper sleep.
One beauty product you think every midlife woman should own?
Right. I feel... if we're talking about skincare, I'm thinking retinoids. I just find that they penetrate and you get the actual results. So if your skin can handle it, retinoids are the way forward.
One food or type of food that you think makes a difference to supporting health in midlife?
Protein. I'm protein all the way. I'll start my morning with a protein. Protein's so important for not just your bones, but your muscle mass, and it also helps with your metabolism. So I feel if you start the morning with protein, you're not craving food through the day as much. So protein all the way. And I love my eggs, and I love my Greek yogurt with some berries on top.
Guilty pleasure, final question.
Dark chocolate all the way, but it's so good for you. If you have it dark, high in magnesium, and again, promotes a better night's sleep.
Thank you, Nadia.
Thank you, Nadia Alibay.
Thank you so much for joining me today on Grit and Grace.
So much fun, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today, and thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time, as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.